Fabulous episode.
Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And by exciting, we mean only to us.
Of course.
The rest of you are welcome to drool to your heart's delight.
No, it's exciting.
Exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very small scale.
No. You have to understand, as I do in the depths of my trivial pursuit knowledge, that out at the transmitter, in order for it to work.
We're exciting the radio waves.
No, there's an exciter. There's literally an exciter at the radio transmitter for AM.
Well, that explains it.
And when we talk, it gets excited. And that's why radio waves got. So if you're hearing this over the AM radio, then it's an exciting transmission. Now, if you're hearing it, I don't know how the internet side of it works. All I know is it works through chaos theory. So it's actually, if it was purely an internet broadcast, I would say, welcome to another
just have to stop you
chaotic.
Second. It's not called chaos theory anymore.
I know, it's called complexity theory.
Yes, yes. It's a different thing.
Yeah, but I'm old.
It's a very chaotic thing to say.
Okay, then I could say, welcome to a complexity rather than exciting. Complexing?
Yes,
a complexing broadcast of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Yeah, and we also are supposed to disclaim, and declare at this point. Personal Wealth Coach is a registered investment advisory firm. With its headquarters in Salado, Texas, and it is regulated by and registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission.
So they have supervisory authority, but they don't directly supervise until they are supervising.
This radio program has neither been approved nor disapproved by the chairman of the SEC, who has been nominated but not yet confirmed.
Yes.
You like that?
Right.
Or the acting chair person. Whoever
I have an acting chair. It's got rollers on it, and I sit down on it. It acts to move away from me as I sit down.
We're also supposed to tell you that nothing that we say in this radio presentation should be construed as investment advice, or shouldn't be construed as anything.
I want to know how often people just sit around and construe things.
Obviously a lot, because all of the disclosures that I read – many of the disclosures I read from attorneys and so on are talk about conscrewing.
Right. I think what needs to happen, Congress is having trouble passing other laws, but I think this is one for the public's best interest. If they would just pass a law disallowing anyone to construe again, because it just seems from all of the disclaimers that construing is a bad thing somehow.
Yeah, but we need to have construtiny.
I think you made up a word.
Well, that's great. The root word for conscrew and for scrutiny are the same.
Construe, not screw. Yeah,
but this now. This is theoretically
it's
a family program.
Yes. Yeah. I have read about all the families that get up early in the Saturday morning to listen to our program.
Well, you know, cartoons are us.
Right. What's more entertaining? Well, don't answer that.
Well, now, also, we would absolutely, tremendously love if you have some thoughtful comments, questions, or anything of that nature that has something to do with the economy or investing. And you would give us a call at 773-1400. The area code's 254-773-1400. Why? Because we like to have other people's perspectives. And frankly, I want to hear. I really – and this is Jeff speaking. I don't know. I haven't confirmed this.
I don't
want to
hear from
Jeff.
Anyone. I don't want to – no.
I want to hear somebody who can explain or at least some comments about what went on Friday. In the Congress and the president's in the White House.
We've got comments. Everyone's
I know we've got
comments,
but I mean, it seemed to me to be a little confusing.
Well, you're being redundant.
I am?
Yes. You're talking about Congress, and then you said the word confusing.
Well, you know,
you shouldn't have to repeat yourself. That's all I'm saying.
We said long ago that if progress is the opposite of Congress.
Then, yes. Pro is the opposite of con.
Yeah.
Therefore, progress
and
is the opposite.
At that point, John Carter walked in and sat down and began talking on the
microphone. Right,
which I really thought was odd at the time. But at any rate, he hasn't been in a long time. I'd love to ask him some questions like, how is it that the Republicans in the House of Representatives 60 times passed a repeal and replace bill
when they knew it wouldn't really pass by going through the Senate, but couldn't get it done when they needed it done.
Yeah, I mean,
the one time it counted, they couldn't do it.
Just take the last bill they all voted for.
Yeah, they wouldn't vote for it now that they know that it would pass, though, because the last bill that they voted for, the repeal and replace, was purely a political move, and that bill would not have worked. There's no example of goodness in that bill at all.
Or any of the other bills. But the point is, they passed them.
It was a political statement. Yeah.
Well, they could make a political – it wouldn't get through the Senate this time either. So at least they could have passed it. I don't know. I don't – obviously, I don't understand politics. And
the root of politics means people. And I think we can both agree that we don't understand people, because this
we understand some behavior of people.
Sure, blood pressure, heart rate,
market behavior,
congressional behavior. Whoa.
So let's see what happened this week. This, by the way, is we are speaking to you on Saturday, March 25th, and if it's Saturday, March 25th of 2017, where you are. We'd love to have you give us a telephone call and comment on anything to do with the economy or anything at 254-773-1400. But meanwhile, the stock market acted like the stock market this week. And
what?
The significant thing about the stock market, Standard Poor's 500 stock index dropped 1.44%. Now, it dropped last week some, too. But it dropped 1.44%. But the drop was relatively sudden. And the drop occurred in the middle of the week when it became apparent to people who do trades, a lot of trades in the market, that the American Health Care Act, was not going to gather enough votes in the House of Representatives to pass. Now, was that, let me say that the reason the drop in the market on, I think it was Tuesday, was occurred not because they thought the failure to repeal and replace Obamacare would have a significant effect on the economy. By the way, the conclusion of the market was it wouldn't.
Right.
It was because, and I quote lots of folks, the Wall Street Journal had many people saying this at various times, and they reported it. If this is the number one thing, if this is we're going to repeal Obamacare on the first day in office for the Trump administration, and the one thing that there seemed to be complete consensus on in the Republican Party, which now has the majority in the House and the Senate and the White House, the majority of one in the White House, if they can't pass that, the chances of them doing something even more complex than health care, which is tax reform, is pretty slim. As a matter of fact, the stated reason the market went down and only went down 1.5% or so was that, are any of these things going to happen?
Right. There was another factor here that fits into that nicely. So Tuesday is the day that the market had a weird drop. Because it wasn't associated with a vote yet. The vote hadn't happened.
The consensus was there.
The consensus was there. Monday, the consensus was there. But Tuesday, we have the big drop in the market. And Tuesday also corresponded with get your Halloween music out.
The Whipple Tritching out.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not triple witching.
It used to be triple witching. Yeah, now it's
back in 2002, they changed it to quadruple witching.
That was just the other day.
So quadruple witching. This is, man, if you're not in the market saying that, it just sounds like Halloween
talk. It
was the
quadruple witching hour.
Yes. What it means is every quarter there is a day that all of the future contracts for individual stocks and index futures and a whole series of other things come due. And those days tend to magnify consensus views of the market, because you've got to hold these things. If you don't want to – well, let me say what a futures contract is. People are kind of like, what is this? Well, first you say witching, and now you're talking about contracts on the future. This is psychic now.
You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Right. Futures was – and he's – saying rightly that it's a gamble, but futures were originally developed by farmers to pay for the seed for the crop before they had the crop. So they would sell a contract to sell their crop to someone when the crop came due. And with that money, they would buy the seed to plant the crop. So futures contracts began with this concept. It's better than going to the bank. You basically just go to the person you're going to be selling the crop to, sell them the crop at a discount because it doesn't exist yet. Well, then a market formed on buying and selling these contracts that things don't exist for. So when you hear the commodities markets, you very closely hear a lot of times the futures markets associated with that. Well, the futures markets, they said, well, we're going to do futures on stocks and bonds too. We'll do futures on indexes. We'll do futures on everything. The thing with futures on indexes, and this is where it gets really, really out there. Futures on indexes, you're not actually buying anything except a dollar value that comes to you at the end of the future if you exercise it or don't, as the case may be. So in essence, it's like a Vegas bookie saying, let's gamble on where the stock market's going to be in the future. Because you don't actually get the Standard & Poor's 500 delivered to you at the end of the contract like you would with the crops. You don't suddenly have bushels and bushels of wheat. You don't suddenly have bushels and bushels of the S&P 500. So it's all conceptual. And it's gotten into – we don't do futures contracts, by the way. We consider it pure gambling. Unless you know the farmer, it's probably not a good idea to get in there because the whole thing can change overnight. Even when you do know the farmer, the time between now and harvest could show a lot of other people planting the same thing. It's a very technical area that you need to know a lot of information about. Suffice to say that it exists, and people are making those gambles on where they expect the stock market to be. And over the last quarter, since the election, a lot of people have made the gamble that these laws, the first one being the American Healthcare Act, and the next one being tax reform, and some kind of convoluted regulatory reform in the middle of that, the gamble was there that these things were all going to pass. Well, the consensus was, beginning this week, that it didn't look like the Healthcare Act was going to pass. So the biggest magnifying voice is when all those contracts expired, people in the futures world tend to just do futures. There are some people that do a little bit of futures and a little bit of investing, but most people in futures just do futures. So they renew new contracts. They made new contracts on that day, only this time their contracts were, well, I don't think the market's going to be as high as it is now the next time the contracts expire. So they're making a vote for a quarter out from now, or a vote with their money, saying they expect the stock market to be lower. So the difference is that they bought puts instead of calls, and the puts are things they are allowed to they are allowed to require somebody who sold them the put to buy the stock back from them at today's price or somewhere near it. And I realize that's a really complicated thing. What it says is that the consensus in the market and in the futures market is that a lot of the regulatory, tax, and healthcare reforms that were the platform of the Trump presidency, according to the market, is not going to come to pass. How accurate is that? Well, they were just wrong once. Because they thought a quarter ago, for sure, that the healthcare will pass and that tax reform will pass, and that's part of the bump that we saw in the market. So the flip side of that is now they're saying they really don't think it's going to pass as a whole.
Well, I think the optimism basically is still there. And the reason
it's not strongly negative.
I think the optimism is still there because the market has risen with no real new news, surprising economic events or earnings changes or anything else, has risen about now about 10%. It was 15. Now we're up about 10 since the election. Now, there's a reason for that, and I think the reason, at least the surveys among the traders, consistently point to a couple of things that they think are really important and some things they think are really negative. But the things they think are important and could boost the value of stocks, and so they're buying them in advance, or did buy them in advance, were twofold. One, that regulations will be cut. And two, that there will be significant tax reductions for corporations.
Right.
Now,
they would also like it for individuals, but that's less related to the market.
Mm-hmm. So Here is the problem, and to lay this out, and again, we'd love to have your comments on this. Believe it or not.
Phone numbers, 254-773-1400.
Right.
There we go.
Saturday, March 25th.
Yes. Believe it or not.
Yes. The tax reform will be harder and more controversial and more divisive.
Is it divisive or divisive?
But the on YouTube, they say, at least the reporters say divisive.
Is it
could be divisive,
is
but
it
I think
the Caribbean or the Caribbean.
I have no clue.
Divisive. Okay.
More divisive or divisive, depending on whether you're speaking English or not.
Right.
If you're speaking English as a second language, in other words, you speak American and English is a second language to you, which is from England.
Right. It's divisive.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. The more divisive thing here is the next item up, which is tax reform. And let me give you an example why I think it's that way. It took about a year and a half for Obamacare to be passed and signed into law. And by that, I mean the president worked real hard at it and Congress worked real hard at it.
This was not a first 100-day deal.
Right, and it took a year and a half to come up with something that nobody completely understood.
and nobody completely loved, unless they just politically did.
But they managed, but it took them a year and a half to do that. It took 4 years. I know this may sound more than 4 years. The Tax Reform Act of 1986 is the current tax law that we're under that tax reform would throw out and start over with something different. The Tax Reform Act of 1986 was a primary goal when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, which tells you how long it took.
6 years.
It took Congress 6 years.
But there were a lot of Democrat votes and Republican votes. But still, that's a big difference.
The point is that it isn't the Republicans who have been saying repeal and replace the tax law.
No.
It's been the Republicans and the Democrats who seem to be both Hillary Clinton and Ronald Donald wanted to reform the tax laws.
Yeah,
both of them wanted to cut corporate income taxes.
Vast majority of all candidates said that. Bernie Sanders did not say cut corporate taxes, but everybody else basically did.
And we need to cut corporate taxes because the reason that an awful lot of stuff goes overseas and money stays overseas is because we have absurdly high corporate income tax rates in the United States. We have the highest in the developed world. And we, in order to be competitive in the world.
You're just saying Nigeria is not developed. That's insulting to the Nigerians.
There's probably some other countries too. But basically, if you have a choice, if you're starting a business and you have a choice between 35% of your profits going to or 39% under some circumstances, going to the federal government plus whatever state taxes you happen to pay in the various states you're operating in, versus paying 10 to 15% by locating in Ireland.
Right. And in certain cases, 7% by locating in Ireland, depending on how your tax situation is set up.
The European Union has said, no, that was bad.
Yeah. You can't do that anymore. And Ireland said, well, we can set our own taxes. And they said, no, you cannot.
Roughly 10 to 15% in Ireland. In other words, if you could cut your tax bill in half, if you look whatever you pay to the Internal Revenue Service and you had the ability to cut it in half and live in a really pleasant place, you probably would do so.
Yeah, who wouldn't like to hang out in Ireland while doing business?
So the point is that if we come down to – we do have some better things here. So if we –
a lot of better things
here. The proposal that Barron's came out with was 22% tax rate for corporations. Congress
I think that's
had
feasible.
Said 20. The issue is that means a lot of tax revenue that comes from corporations – it's got to be replaced somehow.
Well, let me come in here because this is something that I did a lot of research on over the past year. Direct, real economic research, not reading articles. And that is, as the normal listeners have heard us say many times.
No, we don't have.
I guess all the weird listeners have heard.
Right.
Those of you that are just tuning in for the first time haven't heard us talk about this. There's something called the Laffer Curve.
Ha!
It was termed after Arthur Laffer, who was the head of the Council of Economic Advisors to President Ronald Reagan. He named this curve for tax revenue to the government. And the concept here is that if you have 0% taxes, then the government obviously gets 0% revenue. But on the other end of the spectrum, if you have 100% taxes, the government also gets 0% revenue because nobody's going to go to work. You don't work all day long just to give everything to the government. So somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot. If you raise taxes above a certain amount, people work less and therefore revenue drops. If you drop taxes below another certain amount, revenue drops because people are making money and not paying it to you. So somewhere in the middle, there's a place called, on the Laffer curve, the Laffer point. And that point moves around all the time, but that's the sweet spot, the best place for taxes to be in a given area so that you get the most revenue to the government. The Laffer curve on corporate taxes, we are way above it at this point. It's easy to see that. The way above it means that they're high enough that the federal government is losing revenue because companies aren't bringing their money home. It's an easy thing to see. You just look at all the major global companies that are based in the United States and ask them how much money they have abroad overseas. And we've got a call coming in. So caller on 773-1400, go ahead. You're on the Personal Wealth Coach. Caller? Oh, we lost him.
Well, that shows something.
I don't know what it shows, but it certainly shows something. Okay, so the Laffer point, we're way above it. Now, the problem is that it's really, really hard to predict where the Laffer point is until after you've moved the tax revenue, because it changes every year and it has a lot to do with what's going on in the economy. So you really need to be able to adjust it mid-flow to find the right spot. It's really hard to plan for your own taxes if they keep moving the numbers around on you. So from the governmental perspective, it's really, really hard to peg exactly where the revenue should be. Barron's is saying 22%. The Republicans have said up till now 20% being the top tax rate for corporate taxes. Right now, it's 39%, or 39.6%. However, unlike your income taxes, your personal income taxes, the way the brackets work in the corporate world is not the same. You know, in the personal world, you start out at a low income tax bracket, and then you move up to the next tax bracket, and then you move up to the next bracket. It's like stair steps. Well, the corporate tax bracket is like stair steps that go up and down. So after you've reached a certain level of income, that stuff is all taxed at these different tax brackets. And then you reach a certain another level of income, and that next set of money is taxed at a lower rate. And then the next set of number is taxed at a higher rate. So just the simple complexity of the tax law, on top of the fact that the top tax bracket, which you move in and out of in the upper income area, in and out and in and out and in and out, most of it's in the upper tax bracket. The complexity is such that you have to have a huge team of people just to figure that out. And this isn't something that the government will help you with. So when they pass this law, it means you've got extra expenses in that the taxes are high, and extra expenses in that you need a huge team of people just to figure out how high the taxes are. That's the complexity that everybody, Democrat and Republican, can say that is slowing down business. So here's the problem, and this is where I broke in because you were saying this. The current Balanced Budget Act says that if you cut taxes, you've got to cut spending, because we're making the assumption in that law that cutting taxes will cut revenue. And we have to make that assumption because we don't know if we're going to gain revenue or lose revenue when we cut taxes. But back when Bill Clinton signed the capital gains tax reform, and it's a weird thing to think that Bill Clinton lowered capital gains taxes, revenue to the government went up when the taxes dropped. So George W. Bush came in and lowered it further, and revenue dropped. So we can watch that revenue curve to figure out where it is. The likelihood of corporate taxes getting done correctly is very, very low. I'm sorry I took the whole floor from you. You were talking about the Balanced Budget Act and lowering taxes. You'd have to find the place to make the cuts to make up the revenue.
It's not just the Balanced Budget Act. Congress has proven since it passed the Balanced Budget Act that it's really, really, really highly adept at ignoring it.
Yes.
And has found ways to spend literally over $3 trillion without encountering the restrictions of the Balanced Budget Act.
Correct.
The difficulty is, if you cut, and this is, by the way, the Congressional Budget Office, by the way, anticipated an initial positive revenue to the United States government if we cut corporate income taxes. However, the laws is there, and there's several of them in place right now, say they have to look at 10 years of revenue. And
right.
The reason they did that, again, this was a Republican-initiated bill, was to say that if you do something right now that costs us money, but over the long term, it makes the government money.
Right.
It's okay. Because as long as over a 10-year period, you come out, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and they do require that the Congressional Budget Office score it. As long as the Congressional Budget Office says that over a 10-year period, it's revenue neutral or revenue positive,
right,
then, and this is a key, you can get by with 51 votes in the Senate. If, then you're going to do three of those bills a year, they have to be revenue neutral or cut revenue. They have to actually cut the deficit over a 10-year period in order to be subject to the 51 vote. Otherwise, it takes 60 effectively because you've got to stop
right
the filibuster.
The type of rule that they're following there, it's called a reconciliation
right
bill. You're only allowed three of those, and they have to be budget related.
So here's the point. If we're going to cut taxes, the Congressional Budget Office has already scored this one. Initially, we would get an increase in revenue as people brought money home and they paid the lower tax rate, which really wouldn't be about like 5% on the money they brought home. And because they've already paid taxes overseas on it, so on average, they'll pay 5% of all the trillions of dollars they bring home, which will be a positive. However, over the 10-year period, it's a big negative. So somewhere we have to come up with additional revenue. This is where the border adjustment tax comes in, which was in the Better Way plan presented by Speaker Ryan. For the tax bill. The problem with the border adjustment tax is now the dust has settled in. People have looked at it very carefully, and they've come to an interesting conclusion. The price on goods at Walmart and other places where people routinely buy things would probably rise between 15 and 20%. So the way the government would cut taxes to corporations is effectively increase the price that the average person who voted for Donald Trump, who typically shops more often at Walmart than they do at Macy's, is basically get them to pay more at Walmart so that corporate taxes can be cut, which is not very politically palatable. And not to mention the fact that, folks, if we got that kind of increase in prices in goods in the United States of everything we import, by the way, this will include food, because much of the food that you eat in the wintertime in the fresh vegetable section of the grocery store comes from outside the United States. So it would go up 15 to 20%. There'd be no big offset that anybody can find. That would be a jump of 20% there, which would equate to about a 10 or 12% rise in inflation. Believe me, when the Congressional Budget Office analysis of this came out, if the prices went up 15% or even 10%, it would constitute a sudden jump in inflation of 10%, which would mean that Social Security would go up 10%, that all the things that are tied to the CPI that the government pays out, retirement payment to military, to civil servants, Social Security, all would suddenly jump by 10%. The expense to the government to do that would be, excuse me for putting it roughly, but it would be mind-boggling. And the end result is we would, all this deficit we thought we were going to get rid of, with the border adjustment tax being a positive revenue source, suddenly would disappear as the government's fixed payments in Social Security and retirements and everything associated with it suddenly jumps the same amount as we gathered revenue from the border. That, it, frankly, at this point, has about 0% chance of passing anywhere in Congress. So in order to do tax cuts, we either have to cut spending by the amount that we're cutting taxes, which means we have to, if we're not going to cut Social Security or Medicare, we'd have to cut defense. Therein is the conundrum. Therein is the problem. And I know people have often said to me, well, if we just cut foreign aid is such a tiny slice.
It's very, very small, less than 1%. Very much less than
1%. You could cut it and it would be within the noise level of the deficit. It really wouldn't have any effect at all. It's a very tiny piece of the budget. So, well, we could cut welfare. Well, in fact, we've already cut welfare about as far as we're likely to be able to cut it.
And we've cut it in a way that makes it very unpalatable to politically to change. And that is by one of the greatest moves by the Democrats was by taking welfare away from a paycheck every month and calling it a tax credit. Because if you get a tax credit, earned income tax credit or any of those tax credits, basically the Republicans now have to raise taxes to take that away. Rather than cutting an expense, it's called a tax credit. So Republicans who are anti-raising taxes to
could vote for it.
Right. You can't vote against a tax credit if you're a Republican because that raises taxes.
There's a lot of weirdness in that particular section of the law.
Politics has warped the law in a way that makes it unrecognizable from either party platform.
So we got a situation where, very frankly, and this is just Jeff speaking, I don't think much of anything's going to change.
I hope it does. But at this point, the amount of cooperation it will take among the Republicans with the Democrats to get this done. Tax reform is in order to cut taxes, you've got to cut deductions. And nobody wants the mortgage interest rate deduction to be cut.
The litmus test will occur within the next month.
We can tell whether it's gold or not in the next month?
We're going to be able to tell whether we'll move forward or not in the next month. I mean, there's a lot of evidence will pop up in the next month. Within the next month, by April 16th, according to Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin, did I get it right?
I believe so.
He wrote a letter to the Speaker of the House. But in all the noise that went by, he wrote a letter to the Speaker and to the leaders in Congress dated March 16th. And in all the noise going by, nobody paid very much attention to it.
Tiny blurb.
This particular letter said, 1 month from the date of this letter, the government shuts down if you don't raise the debt ceiling and agree to borrow more money.
Saying it to the Republicans. Yes, this is the thing that when Obama did it, quite often the whole threat of we're not raising the debt ceiling was there.
And let me tell you what's going on right now as we speak. If you are a government employee or have eligibility and are using the thrift savings plan by the government, it's either the F or the G fund. I don't remember which one of the funds. The fund that is government securities, when you contribute your pay to it, I think it's the F, federal securities. When you contribute your pay to it each month or every 2 weeks or however often you're contributing to it, the pay is not going into your account. It's going to cover the fact that at this moment in time, as of March 16th, the government ran out of money, and it is using Peter to pay Paul. In other words, it's borrowing from one side to pay the other side, and the way it's doing that right now, a prime example, is if you are participating in the Thrift Savings Plan and you've got $100 a month going to your government securities fund, it is not being deposited in the fund and will not show up on your statement. If you look really carefully, you'll find out that the money came out of your paycheck, but it didn't go into the statement because it's being used to run the government because we are technically at our borrowing limit now. We're past it. And there's a whole series of things that the Treasury can do to shift money from one place to another. And they'll start sometime during the next month, they'll start pulling from other places.
I think they're called extraordinary measures.
Yes. And this is the point.
The extraordinary measures are when you can measure more than 1,000,000 miles or change how much money and where it comes from.
Because of the way that they report on the government securities fund, that really won't show up until next month. If Congress does not raise the debt ceiling, things will start to shut down this 1 month from now, or less than 1 month from now. So if the Freedom Caucus says, okay, you're free to borrow a whole bunch more money, huge amounts of more money, because we've got this big deficit and we're not going to do anything about it.
Well, I really don't think that the Freedom Caucus now has an, I mean, they're talking about roughly 40 votes in the Freedom Caucus. This mm-hmm. is, these are the ones that say no new debt, no new anything as far as right. spending. Now with the majority of the Republicans, and the Democrats really don't want to shut down Congress or so, shut down government. So I believe that that bill is going to go through, but it's going to show more fragmentation in the Republican.
If you remember, a minority was able to shut down the raising of the debt ceiling. It's going to take a 60% vote to get it through because there's going to be filibusters. If they treat it like they treated it before. On the other hand, if they show enough flexibility to say it's okay to run really big deficits of $500 billion a year as long as you're a Republican, that probably will not go over too well in some people's home districts.
Right. Well, we've got commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side. If today is March 25th and you're listening to us, if you're not listening to us, then you didn't just hear me ask that. You can call us at 254-773-1400.
It's the G Fund.
The G Fund.
The G Fund.
In the TSP.
Yeah, the yes. letter he said, Secretary of the Treasury wrote Congress and said, we ain't putting no money in the G Fund starting now.
All right. So we're going to play some commercials and we'll be back on the other side. Please join us for more.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Jake's timing is just a little off. It's because of speed of light lag.
Right.
Light lag, as opposed to heavy lag, which is better. Telephone number is 254-773-1400. Call us and give us your opinion, your thought, or your something else. I mean, if you think that all the rest of the things that were promised, it looks like we're getting a call, are going to happen, call in and tell us how you think they're going to happen, where they're going to get the money without running a deficit. Let me know something here, okay? And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I've been listening to you, and I think you're making some very good points, but I also think it's a little bit disingenuous to turn around and say after 8 years of running massive budget deficits to all of a sudden come to a complete stop and say, we have to have a balanced budget.
No, I completely agree with you.
No, my point being is you were making the comment that we'll know in 30 days whether the Republicans will accept an adjustment to the debt, wherein, in essence, you've got to get the economy going to bring more revenues in, so you're going to have to continue on a period of time for deficits until you can get the revenue generation up by spurring the economy.
We're not saying balanced budget. No.
Or at least no deficit.
No deficit.
Neither of us are saying that. What we're saying is that the Republicans have a rule in place, a law in place that they passed for themselves. How are they going to follow it? The Balanced Budget Act doesn't say we actually have a balanced budget, which is one of the really biggest misnomers of the world. It means that we can't pass new spending without new taxation. We can't cut taxes without cutting spending. In other words, it doesn't get rid of the deficit.
It just simply says, let's not massively increase the deficit, is what the Balanced Budget Act, which was passed under Newt Gingrich, by the way,
right.
says.
And now let me address one thing you said right at the beginning. You said after 8 years, and that's it's a political rhetoric thing, because if you look back, it's been a lot more than 8 years. It's mm-hmm. been 17 years.
It has been more than 8 years, but of course the last administration, double, tripled the overall debt of all the previous administrations.
That's correct.
But yes, and so I know, I mean, the point is we have to have someone in there who's going to rock the boat, such as getting rid of a lot of the expenditures, which to me are completely unnecessary.
Well, let me explain why I brought it up this way. After the election, the lame duck Congress passed a bill, and I think it was 10, I don't remember how many billions of dollars it was. They added to the debt a certain number of billions of dollars on condition that they wouldn't have to raise the debt ceiling now. I mean, that was their position, is they're saying that, okay, you've got this long, and what we want you to do is cut enough spending by whatever means, that we stay within our current debt ceiling. And that was a really firm position that they took at that time. And if they turn around now and give a huge increase in the debt ceiling and without a fight, remember, every time the debt ceiling increase came up before, there was a big fight over the budget. And the Congress of the United States has the all spending originates in the House. They have they solely have the ability to cut spending or increase spending. They now, in the past, they said it doesn't make any difference what we do because the president would veto it. And he did several times. So now they have the opportunity to say, okay, the president's budget is in front of them. If they go with the president's budget,
they won't. They haven't gone with the president's budget I'm just saying in a long time.
If they go with the president's budget, they don't have to raise the debt ceiling. If they decide to throw it out and spend a bunch of money that he said we're not going to spend, they have to raise the debt ceiling. So it's kind of down to the, was that just rhetoric like all the, like the 60 repeals of Obamacare that they knew couldn't pass under a Democratic president, and now they have an opportunity to actually, they could have done the same bill and sent it out, but now they realize that it's going to become, it might become law. They couldn't pass it. What'll happen when we hit the debt ceiling? Was that all political rhetoric?
Wait a minute. We're talking politics. Everything is political rhetoric.
Was it all political rhetoric, or were they serious? And it's just, if they raise the debt ceiling, then it's business as usual, and don't expect a big tax reform. And this is my opinion, purely my opinion. Don't expect a big tax reform. Don't expect all the trade deals to be renegotiated. I mean, basically, we're just going to continue on the same course if they raise the debt ceiling without a fight. Now, they may raise the debt ceiling because they get into a fight and the Republicans in the House of Representatives refuse to, and the government gets shut down, and we get some spending cuts and all kinds of things. But if they don't fight over it and they say it's okay now when it wasn't before because we want to spend more money, that will be a strong indicator.
I don't remember that Trump has already reduced the deficit by $200 billion, whereas Obama by this time in his administration had raised it by
$400 billion. No, his budget would reduce it by $200 billion.
Yeah.
But his budget hasn't been passed. It could be. The House of Representatives could say pass the budget as the president gave it to us, and we don't have to raise the debt ceiling.
But the problem with that is that Congress just doesn't pass presidential budgets. They haven't done it in a huge crazy amount of time.
And they can make some minor modifications to it in the next 30 days and pass it. But that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying we need to go to a balanced budget. I'm not saying the last 8 years didn't happen. I'm just saying this will be the litmus test. How will they treat it differently now that it might actually become law what they do? Or will they say it's business as usual, let's just go on about our business?
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you for the clarification.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, very much appreciate the call. I mean, somebody's listening to us.
Yeah, one guy.
The fascinating thing here is that, as I said, the balanced budget amendment, the balanced budget act, it's not an amendment. They've talked about putting it as an amendment to the Constitution. There's no way that would ever happen, at least not in our lifetimes. That act, that concept of in order to raise spending, you've got to raise taxes and vice versa. That was under Newt Gingrich. It was under Bill Clinton. And it's been followed to some extent ever since. Has that kept the budget balanced? No. It has moved it further away from being balanced because Congress is really good at following rules that it's made for itself to allow itself to step around this stuff. So basically, the question we're asking, we ask the same thing to whatever party, is if your stated intent is to lower the deficit, if your stated intent is to cut spending and lower taxes, now's the time. You're not going to get another opportunity for a long time. If you don't take this opportunity now, and this is something I mentioned this in passing as you were talking about it, the Tax Reform Act of 1986. Under Ronald Reagan, he came in with it being his big deal the first time he was elected. He had to get reelected for it to actually pass. There were Democrats and Republicans that voted for it.
Mm-hmm.
we cannot stay polarized. We cannot keep saying the thing about it for the past 8 years. We've got to include the past 9 years beyond that. So we've got Republicans and Democrats both taking the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And during that time period, we've gotten more and more debt. There's no party now that gets to wave the flag and say, we are the party of the balanced budget, because that has not been the action. The last 4 years of the Bush administration saw record deficits far beyond anything that had been seen up to that point. Now, the fact that Obama followed up with even more shouldn't be a surprise, because Democrats like to spend more than Republicans. And if Republicans give themselves the excuse to do that kind of spending, then of course the Democrats will. So coming forward to today, unless we get some clarification to say we want to really look at the future, if we really do want to cut the debt back, then we got to figure out where we want to cut spending. Well, that means we got to cut entitlements and defense. Because as you said, and this is something anybody can look it up, the total tax revenue to the United States government is more than spent from Social Security, Medicare, and defense. There is nothing else left. It's spent, more money is spent than we receive as revenue just from those three things. We can cut everything else and we're still going to be in debt, unless we cut the three things that nobody wants to think about. I don't want to think about cutting Social Security, but we're going to need to cut something. I don't want to talk about cutting defense, but we need to cut something. I don't want to cut Medicare, but we need to cut something. This is like that horrible conversation that spouses have with each other when they're spending more than they make. Well, I don't want to stop going out to eat. Well, sometimes you need to stop going out to eat. Or either that, or you need to find another way, another job. Well, that means more taxes when you're talking about the government. Another stream of income means that somebody is paying for that. We, in essence, we the people, employ the government. The government is spending more than we pay them by giving it back to us. This is a feedback loop that has a lot of trouble stopping. The entitlements have gotten big enough, and by definition, we feel entitled to them. We've paid into them. At some point, we've got to draw a line and say, we can't keep feeling entitled to money we have to borrow to receive. We got to lay off.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.